Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Ron Slay, speaking of sleigh rides, going to be a televised sleigh ride tonight. He's part of the Ensworth program on TV tonight against NBA.
Yeah, we're live now. I want to say it's because of me, but...
Are you going to dress up tonight for that?
No, it's because of him.
I might wear some Cole Haans or something, but... polo, catch me in original wear.
Yeah, I'd say, what's your typical game night attire at Ensworth?
You know what? Coming into it, Chad, I wanted to be a suit guy.
Yeah, you always want to be the suit guy.
Yeah, that looks really good.
Or even like the sports coat with no tie.
Right.
Tony cool Bennett for Virginia. That's a good look.
Yeah, but... I think the polo, man, the suits, they're a little bit more expensive. So if my weight just increased, it's worth Coach Bowers. Now I'll be over there in the suit. How about that? Until then, I'm straight out the gift shop.
I thought there was going to be a sweat factor also, perhaps.
Yeah, there could be. It could be, but I'm not allowed to get off the bench. So
does Coach Bowers wear a suit, or does he wear the polo?
You know what? He kind of wings it.
Yeah.
I've been noticing him a lot. Like sometimes he comes with a tie, sometimes he comes with a golf shirt, and sometimes he has a blazer on.
Just whatever he's feeling.
You never know.
Whatever he's feeling.
He's a man of all styles.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. But the Bob Huggins style is what I like, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I can totally see that.
I like that.
You love that. Ron Slay joins us here on the Midday 180 Slay Ride Time, talking some college hoops, specifically Tennessee. When you see Kentucky saying, "We want Tennessee," what comes to mind?
The spelling. immediately, if you want me to be honest.
Oh, we always want you to be honest.
Yeah.
Is that true arrival status, though, when you have Kentucky saying that about Tennessee instead of the opposite?
Either that or begging. It's one of the two. So I don't know if they want the acclaim of playing number one. It used to be opposite. But I think it's just showing that we've arrived and they respect what Coach Barnes has put together up there. So Kentucky's begging, and we'll give them what they want. How about that?
How much do you think about that matchup coming up next week?
It's definitely on the fans' mind. Me as a fan, is definitely on my mind. I think the players also are doing a tremendous job of not saying that they're looking ahead, but you know for sure it's circled on the calendar.
What jumps out to me at watching Kentucky play now, Ron, and this is always what you watch out for with these John Calipari coach Kentucky teams, they're still not scary offensively. They don't do a lot of things that really worry you. You know, they've got good talent,
right,
and they can get hot, and it could make life difficult on you. But defensively, I mean, giving up 48 points or whatever it was to South Carolina, and they are the number one team in America, I think, now defensively, holding teams to low scores. That's where the best of John Calipari's Kentucky teams, as the year goes on, they sell out defensively. And that's what this team's doing.
Yeah, I think so, and I think they also – establish a pecking order offensively. But like you said, you go into the games going against Kentucky, you always notice the first thing is that their length. And once they start to put that together with principles on defense, it all rolls over into one. That's why they never get better until going into the tournament. So Cal's got him back up there. He's got him knocking on the door. Too bad we're behind that door with the door locked. You know what I mean, Paul?
I like it.
Lock the lock.
Yeah. Use your line. Still,
I hope when the door opens, I hope there's something different behind it than was behind mine.
You never know with Kentucky fans, though.
Yeah, wouldn't put it past them.
Ron, we're going to get back into talking specifically Tennessee basketball, but we just had Buster Olney on. I asked him about Mookie Betts,
right,
and his story nationally. Your podcast, you caught up with Mookie this week, and that's this week's edition. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, it is. We were fortunate to be able to sit down with Mookie before he took off for spring training and really just talk about his life growing up here in Nashville and really things away from basketball, his other likes such as bowling and things of that nature and the impact he has on kids now.
Plug that podcast. Where can people find it? Let them know.
It'll most definitely be the Boom Boom Room.
The Boom Boom Room podcast. At
5 o'clock, 5 to 6. So check me out 9:50 a.m. and it'll also be Facebook Live, Instagram Live. So tune in all social media platforms.
Ron, when you watch Tennessee now compared to earlier in the season, back in November, where have they improved the most? Not just in their ranking, but depth-wise. Last week we had the discussion, Chad and I were discussing whether or not we liked the status of the bench right now.
Right.
So I don't know if that's where we can point to for improvement. Where have you seen the biggest growth?
I think the biggest growth I would see is being able to rebound for other guys when they're going through a rough patch. I think early on in the season, like, we were all concerned about how we look when Grant Williams fouls out of the game and what are we going to do. I think we've adapted to that, and Grant has done a better job of not fouling out, but we've adapted to everybody being able to pick each other up. So when Bowden's having a rough patch, we picked him up. When Lamonte wasn't knowing what he was going to do when he came back, we picked him up. Kyle Alexander was fouling out of games, picked him up. East Ponds is struggling defensively, which that's his thing. We've been able to pick him up. Admiral Schofield, and the list goes on and on. So I think the coach has done a tremendous job of guys being able to bounce back for each other. And that's the biggest thing. When guys are down, being able to not miss a beat. And that's the most important thing for me.
East Pond showed a little bit of offense in this game, which is an encouraging sign. Only played 7 minutes.
Right.
He had 6 points, though. He was 2 for 2 from the free throw line, had a nice driving layup. Why does he not take the ball to the basket? That seems to me would be his game. He's going to draw a foul,
right,
or he's going to go up and dunk it,
right,
on someone with his physicality. He just seems timid. But this was the first game against Missouri where, you know, really it wasn't a great game for a lot of players offensively, but he seemed a little bit more under control. Did you see the same thing?
Yeah, I did. And to quote Coach Byron Scott when he was with the New Orleans Hornets, when they were the Hornets then, I had a friend playing with them, Linton Johnson, who went on to get a championship with the Spurs. But David West went down in that season, and he tried to change his role. He was open and started shooting threes because he thought he could shoot. And Byron Scott told him, listen, son, you're open for a reason. You're not working to get open. You're just open for a reason.
Yeah, so that's the scouting report.
Right. So to answer your question, why is Eves not taking it to the hole? Eves can't really dribble. In order not to get a turnover, Eves don't go to the hole. You know what I mean? So it's a part of that he can grow on in the offseason. You see in transition, he has no problem finishing. Like you said, one was a layup and then one was a lob from Kyle Alexander. So,
by the way, that was one of the plays of the year, was Kyle Alexander running point break on a 2-on-1 and ended up throwing the lob,
exactly,
at 6'11" to Eves Ponds. It was, exactly, a nice play. I believe, Ron, you like where the roster is. Obviously, they're number one in the country for a reason, with pretty much everyone. But they're going to have to get something from either Fulkerson or Derek Walker,
right,
offensively. If they're going to go to the Final Four, they're going to win a national title. There's going to come a game in the tournament, or maybe two, where they're going to need to get double digits from someone because of foul trouble or something else. Who's the most likely candidate to step up? Because Rick Barnes has said repeatedly, their role is to play defense and rebound.
Mm-hmm.
We're not relying on them for scoring. I think those guys are going to have to step up and score at some point, though. Who's the best candidate to be that guy that steps up?
Well, I think Rick Barnes is on to something, especially with Fulkerson and Derek Walker. You know, he's doing a pretty good job with those guys, knowing that they play defense. I think, for me, personally, I believe it would be Jalen Johnson.
Really?
He's been getting more minutes, you know, and he's long, and he's not afraid to shoot. I think it's just a matter of him getting more comfortable as the season goes on and prepping for the tournament. And once he gets into the tournament, he could be that lightning rod, such as Chris Silver was 2 years ago with South Carolina. You know, he was known as a defensive guy, and all of a sudden he's getting double-double scoring, and it took much pressure off Sendarius Thornwell when they made their Final Four run. So I see a kid like Jalen Johnson, but I also don't want to rule Fulkerson out. You know, and who we're talking about, eighth and ninth guys. So as long as the sixth and seventh guy do their job, which is Bowden and Lamonte Turner, I think we might be all right.
So I was watching the broadcast the other night, and I think Jimmy Dykes does a good job. And he was saying, he was talking about the Tennessee team, and he said, you know what? If I'm going into a brawl, the one guy on Tennessee team I'm taking with me, and this is going to surprise everyone, is Lamonte Turner.
Right.
He said that's the guy you want in an all-out fight because he has ice water running through his veins.
Yeah.
He does not care. And he said, I look physically at – he's like, of course you want Grant Williams and Schofield also in that brawl. But he's like, if there's a draft, he's taking Lamonte Turner first. What do you think he means by that when he says it, knowing him?
Well, for one, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to let Jimmy go get Lamonte, and I'm going to go get Grant. You know? So I don't care how tough he is. You know? I mean, I know these others are animals also. But I think Lamonte being able to battle back, you know, especially from his shoulder surgery, not miss a beat. He went through a rough patch in practice. but he was still sticking in there. And I think it's another way of Coach Barnes patting guys on the back in the media. You know, he did the same thing with Bowden earlier when he took him out of the starting lineup. He also commended him how tough he was, and Bowden through the ankle and things of that nature that we don't even know about. So I think it's Lamonte Turner. He comes from a good pedigree. You know, Rashad Moore, who was an NFL player, played with the Patriots for a while up at UT, played football, D-tackle. That's his cousin. So he was.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was part of the Albert Hainsworth gang, the John Henderson gang. So yeah. It's in him. It's in him. And he got to see that growing up. So the toughness is there. And he's also playing for something different. I think what we have right now is kids that are really, really excited about playing for Tennessee. And I think that goes a long way.
The mid-range game is not dead with the Vols.
Right.
You don't see it across college basketball. They hit more elbow jumpers from 15 to 17 feet than almost any team in college basketball. Jordan Bowden has become money
right
on that curl. Him and Jordan Bone can both get the ball off a curl screen and just pop it moving towards the basket as well as anybody in the country. You don't see that as much in today's game.
Nah, you don't.
Are you guys teaching the mid-range game over at Innsworth at all?
No, you know what?
Or it's either layups or threes.
I really want to, but me and Coach Bowers are at a standstill about that right now. He wants threes and layups, and I'm not mad about the mid-range games, but I think Coach Barnes has took a book, took a page out of Popovich's book. You know, he switched his game up, and they're starting to shoot more mid-range shots, and I think you see that a lot because people are working on closing out to the three and then coming over for help side on drives. So that one hard dribble is catching people off guard. Bone does a great job. Bowden does a great job. Schofield, all the shooters do a great job. So I think it's just being ahead of the curve right now. I think it'll come back.
It's the Midday 180 on 104.5 The Zone. Vanderbilt AD and Vice Chancellor David Williams has passed away. There was an internal memo sent out within the athletic department at 12:38 this afternoon through Associate Vice Chancellor Candace Lee, asking staff to keep Williams' family in your thoughts and prayers. Our condolences to his friends and family on behalf of 104.5 The Zone. Nicholas Zeppos released a statement saying, David Williams stood tall on this campus, in this city, and in college athletics nationally as an incomparable leader, role model, and dear friend to me and so many others. We are devastated by this loss. His impact on our community is immeasurable and will be felt for generations to come. We offer our deepest condolences to Gail, his children, and the entire Williams family on this immense loss. Williams was in studio with us last November, where we spent time reflecting on his 18-year tenure here at Vandy and asked him of his proudest moment of his career.
You know, that's kind of hard to say what's one thing. I throw in a few things. Obviously, one thing that I'll always remember is I didn't know about Perry Wallace before I came here, and I learned about the Perry Wallace story, and I learned about how Perry Wallace and the university had had a not-so-good separation. And I actually had been, some students had talked to me about how does this university honor Perry Wallace, and it just couldn't happen. Sometimes I always say, you can't always do what you want to do, but you can always do what you can do. And one of the things I had the power to do is in an athletic thing, so we retired his number, and that was the thing that started to bring him back into a relationship with the university. So it doesn't seem like big to other people, but I do think that's important. I would also say the relationships with the kids. I mean, I think back to the Saturday before we opened the season this year. I opened up that Saturday morning with a text from Jordan Matthews and his wife telling me that they had just had a baby boy. And I ended that Saturday by going to the wedding of Vince Taylor, who had played football for us. So the relationships you develop with these young people who come to your university at 17 and then they leave. I mean, as I would say, you come as a kid and you leave as an adult, really. And that you make a long-term, lasting relationship with them. And so I would say that. And the fact that I've been real proud of the fact that we've always been able to maintain very, very, very good graduation rates.
Anything you're disappointed that you weren't able to get done or that you wish you were able to leave behind that you haven't been?
Oh, yeah. You know, you never leave a job like this where you don't have things that you said, boy, if I just had another year or 2 years, I could get done. You know, I know people probably will laugh at this. I think we were relatively close, really close, to actually winning the East in football. And we just couldn't get over that hump. And I think that would have been an accomplishment that no one really, really thought that could happen here. And so that would be one that I would look back on. But it's just not finishing things. I mean, there's always another thing that you could do. There's another facility that needs to be dealt with. There's another a kid that needs to graduate. I would have loved to win a championship. My sport as a kid was track. I would have loved for us to basically win something more in track. But all in all, there's really not a lot of regrets you walk away from. The kid that didn't make it, you know, the kid that you lost, whether you lose them to graduation. I mean, we had three kids that while they were student athletes for us died. Those were probably the hardest moments. You wish you could walk that back and change that. Not that it was our responsibility, but, you know, it becomes a part of your family.
There you hear the words of David Williams and the sad news that he passed away today. And we've got Ron Slay here with us. He mentioned there about Perry Wallace, a Pearl High School graduate. We've got Pearl Cone graduate Ron Slay on with us. And, Ron, I know you know the history of Perry Wallace and how he was the trailblazer of the SEC. It's pretty cool to hear David Williams, in his own words, say one of the greatest accomplishments was repairing the relationship with Vanderbilt and Perry Wallace, because Perry was such a big part of the history of Vanderbilt.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that just speaks volumes of who David Williams was. I think when you put yourself aside and look for other people to thrust into the forefront, especially as a Perry Wallace, and uniting people, uniting the university, and also I think it did more for the university, I mean more for the community, than it did for the university, and as far as a credibility standpoint and things of that nature. But and I don't think that's what he was trying to do. You know, I think he genuinely wanted to unite, you know, the university and Perry Wallace back together. And kudos to him and condolences to his family and the Vanderbilt family.
Coming up in the last segment of the show today, Clay Travis, who was in a class taught by David Williams and was close friends with him, will join us again to reflect on the life of David Williams coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. We're talking college basketball, though, right now with Ron Slay. Ron, am I crazy to think that Vanderbilt played pretty well at Arkansas, gave themselves a chance to win? I think they get off the schneid tomorrow night at home against Alabama. Alabama is a tough team. Alabama does not need to drop this one because they're on the bubble right now. Does Vandy win their first game tomorrow, or are we going to have to wait until later in the season to see that?
Honestly, I think we're going to have to wait until later in the season to see that.
You don't like the matchup?
No, I don't. I think Alabama is trying to get back into the conversation of, if we get 7 or 8 teams in, I think they're knocking on the door, and they're one game out of being in that 6th spot or our 5th spot. So I think
if Alabama closed it out against Tennessee, they'd be in right now.
Right.
Without a doubt. On the road.
Without a doubt.
So you can't
slip up like that anymore. And I think Vanderbilt is just, the schedule doesn't fall in their favor right now. And you're going up against other guys that are athletic. And with those guys grouped together like they are, I don't think anybody's trying to lose any kind of space or jockeying position for that 5th and 6th spot.
This news just coming down, news all over the place. This news coming out from Grant Ramey of GoVols 24/7. Eves Pons will miss tomorrow's game against Florida after undergoing facial surgery today. He was injured late in Thursday's practice at Pratt Pavilion. You've seen how Tennessee practices. I'm honestly shocked they don't have more injuries and how hard they get after it. A facial surgery
that broken
required
nose
for Eves Pons.
It got to be something, a jaw or
maybe
something.
A jaw having to be reset or something like that.
That's tough.
But he'll miss tomorrow's game. So a little bit of hit on depth there for Tennessee. Tennessee-Florida tomorrow. What do you think about that one? And Ron, is the real challenge for Tennessee now, you know you've got two games at home that are very winnable. Don't be lulled to sleep before that huge matchup a week from now in Lexington against Kentucky.
Yeah, I think that is the focus, not to fall asleep and looking ahead. But I also believe that it's two good opponents. So you can't overlook a Florida who wants revenge for you doing a chomp down in their place. And I think Missouri ended it ended the game waking Tennessee up a bit. You know, they got a little bit more physical than intended as far as mucking up the game. Bowden had some fouls that could have been called intentional on him by Pickett, and I think that's going to carry over. And South Carolina plays tough basketball, and they're right there at that fourth spot, and they don't want to let go. So I think it's going to be the attention will be there, and the attention to detail will be also.
Game of the week in the SEC, noon tomorrow on CBS, Kentucky at Mississippi State. Tennessee fans need to root for Mississippi State in this one. They're rooting for Mississippi State the other night against LSU, and they couldn't close the deal and lost in overtime to LSU. So you still have Kentucky and LSU sitting there with one loss, one game behind Tennessee. What do you think of Mississippi State's chances of getting the win at home over Kentucky?
Well, we get to see if Mississippi State is ready to turn the corner. You know, I think Ben Howland is doing a tremendous job down there. But
it's been a little bit disappointing,
without
for a top 15 team preseason.
Without a doubt. I think he needs those guys to get a staple win this season, and what better than a Kentucky game. I think it kind of falls to where South Carolina went up to see Kentucky, and we were going to see if South Carolina was for real. Now we get to turn around and see if Mississippi State's for real at home. And see if they can get a victory against Kentucky.
Ron Slay, we're going to find out if Ensworth is for real tonight against Brentwood Academy.
We sure are.
I'm setting the DVR. I'll be recording that game.
If things are going crazy out there, you can bet that I'm jumping out there on the floor getting a tech to try to. Come on in my pocketbook, Coach.
How much standing do you do during the game? Will you ever stand up and direct, or do you stay seated?
I was doing that a lot, and Coach Bowles has gotten on to me, and he hasn't gotten on to me much. He got on to me and is like, Coach, sit down, I got it. So now I take the one knee approach.
Does he call you Coach?
Around
the players?
Yeah. So now I'm at the end of the bench where I like to sit. Like LeBron, and I'm on one knee. I'm on one knee, so he really can't tell me to sit down. I'm on the knee, Coach. What you want me to do? I can't get no further than that. You want me Indian style?
Just find it away.
Crisscross applesauce.
Ron, always great to see you. Thank you for coming by.
Appreciate Good luck tonight.
It. No doubt. Thanks, guys.
Coming up, Clay Travis reflects on the life and the career of David Williams. It's the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's.